Hey, we'll be right back to this Capital Step show. But first, this amazing offer. Yes, for the first time on any recording, it's the greatest hits of the Kansas School Board.
So you want to be a science teacher? We got to be sure your lesson plan is cool.
Because we can't abide any three-toed creatures being taught in any Kansas school.
You say you'll teach them evolution. Well, you know,
none of us believe in that.
The school board passed a resolution. Well, to show,
we know the earth is really flat.
Hey, that's right. If these guys aren't proof that no one in Kansas has evolved, I'll be a monkey's uncle. Or not.
Hey, hey, we're not monkeys, but people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to drag our hands on the ground.
Oh, you'll run to the record store and not on all fours.
Because we
walk like a man, straight as we can. Walk real erect, it's fun.
Yes, they're not thumbing their noses at anyone, but they could, because they got
opposable thumbs. Are we cool? We're not fools. Opposable thumbs. Who needs school? We got power tools.
We're not so dumb.
You say how come?
Opposable thumbs.
Oh, that's right. You'll go bananas for these swinging tunes. But wait, there's more. How about their newest release? I heard it on the 8-5. It's all contained on this record entitled The Kansas School Board Takes Us Back 50 Years. And on a special bonus cut, the most famous Kansan of all, Bob Dole, tells his first-hand account of how the world began. Order now!
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. You can now hear Great Speeches and Interviews at 96.5 FM in the Sacramento area. Today's program is a call to action. President Jimmy Carter talks about human rights abuses against women around the world and discusses what can be done about the problem.
Well, in the book, I have a whole chapter, maybe a little bit too long of a chapter, about what the Carter Center has actually done and how we have related to women in the most sensitive and deprived areas of the world to utilize their own talent and ability. And you might want to read the book to find out about that. We've dealt primarily with the health issues. The Carter Center last year treated or supervised the treatment of over 36 million people in the world, mostly in the developing world. And we found out when we go into a village, for instance, individual villages in Africa, mostly in the jungle or in the desert areas, that the women are the key people in dealing with the correction of a health problem. They're the ones that are responsible for the family sanitation. They're the ones for training their young children how to wash their face to prevent blindness. They're the ones that are trusted by their neighbors to spread the word to adjacent families if they learn how to deal with a particular health challenge. And so we have found, too, that leaders in those countries are quite receptive to our suggestions. For instance, we went into Ethiopia, which now has a population of about 82 million people. They had very few doctors or nurses in that community, and the Prime Minister of Ethiopia asked me personally if I would train some of his health workers. And we have completed a training program now of 32,000 health workers. About 7,000 have the equivalent of a registered nurse or physician's assistants, and about 27,000 are LPN equivalents. They've never come out of Ethiopia to be trained. We've trained them all there in Ethiopia, and now there's one trained health worker for every 2,500 people, all of whom are women. And this was in a society that formerly would not trust a woman to take a leadership role in energy or in finance or commerce or education or health care. So that's the kind of thing that we have done in 79 countries around the world and on which we're still working. And we try to convince the parents, for instance, who will kill a baby daughter because they want to have sons instead of daughters. We're trying to convince them, if you'll just invest a little bit extra food and education in your daughter, when she gets grown, she can support you in your old age better, perhaps, than your sons would do. So that's the best way I know to prevent this massive murder of baby girls that afflicts me and my conscience so much. But I think that that's what needs to be done to convince the local people. Your daughters can be a great investment for you, and they also can resolve problems that your son and men just can't do of an intimate nature like health care.
Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Gary Hall from the National Cathedral.
And, Gary, Hall, Gary Hall is the dean of the National Cathedral, I should say to people who don't know that. Hi, Dean Hall.
I'm a guy who hangs out at the National Cathedral. Mr. President, I came to hear you during the campaign of 1976, and you happened at that campaign appearance to give an extremely interesting analysis of the thought of Reinhold Niebuhr.
Yes.
And what I'm interested in, what you think today the appropriate role of the faith community is in public policy and public life. We are all familiar with faith communities that exercise a lot of leverage or serve as pressure groups, but does the faith community have an appropriate and authentic role in the development of public policy in our public life?
Oh, certainly, yes. I pointed out a few things on which I disagreed with the Southern Baptist Convention. One I didn't mention was the admixture of religion and politics. I was taught by my father and still believe that we ought to have a total separation of religion and politics. But the Southern Baptist Convention, as you know, has aligned itself with the Republican Party, the more conservative elements of the Conservative Party. And I don't think that the religious community, as you describe it, should get involved in endorsing particular candidates or parties. But in a problem like the one we're talking about discussing today, the abuse of women and girls, there, for instance, I think that the religious community should join in, for instance, in getting the U.S. Senate to ratify the Convention on the End of Discrimination Against Women. The so-called CEDAW provision is passed by the U.N. General Assembly and also the U.N. The U.N. Security Council. Most countries on earth have adopted this, which is kind of a declaration of human rights for women, but the United States Senate refuses to ratify it. And there's another element that I mentioned earlier, and that is the Violence Against Women Act that has been adopted by many countries, the international version of that, that calls on the United States and others to be involved in enforcing the law. The Congress has so far failed to pass it. So that's two examples that I can mention immediately where the religious community should play a major role in trying to encourage the end of discrimination against women. And as you know, in this country, slavery is another major issue that hasn't been adequately addressed by the Congress. I think there again, we can take a stand against human trafficking or slavery, which is still pervasive in the United States itself and can be sharply attenuated by action of the Congress. Another fourth thing that I'll mention very quickly is prostitution. I think that we should adopt the Swedish model of punishing customers of women and pimps and brothel owners instead of punishing the women who are the sexual slaves inside the United States of America. Those are the kind of things where the religious community can help to resolve this abuse of women.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
President Carter, my name is Wade Channel. I'm in the gender office at USAID. I think of you from 1973, in fact, when I was a high school student in Atlanta. And thanks to you, I ended up in Brazil with your wife and 150 other Georgians for 2 weeks. And I'm here 60 countries later, thanks to you. And I thank you for that.
Thank you.
My question is, building on what you've just said in the various issues about the abuse of women, we seem to have a culture of denigration that is part of, it's a subculture throughout the world. And it seems to me that of the many various factors, one of the driving factors there is the expansive spread of pornography.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you could comment on that and what can be done to perhaps staunch that flow, especially given the constitutional rights that are perhaps equal to religious freedoms in this country for pornography. Thank you.
That's a question I don't think I know how to answer because, you know, we have freedom of speech in this country, and I don't want to advocate censorship of what's shown on late night or even early night television these days or what's shown on in American movies. So I wouldn't advocate any direct action against that. Let me take a parallel thing to try to answer your question. My wife is a world champion, I would say, of mental health. And one of the greatest problems has been the, I'd say, improper presentation of mentally ill people as violent and a threat to society. And Rosen has tried for many years, for four decades, as a matter of fact, to remove the stigma from mentally ill people and to show that those who have a mental illness can be treated and live a completely normal life and they are not to be feared in society. So there, she and I, for instance, have been to Hollywood, and we've met with the people who come to Georgia to make movies, and we've tried to encourage them to avoid that kind of denigration or stigmatization of people who have mental illness. And Rosa now has a worldwide program of training journalists on how to present mental illness in a most enlightened and fair way. And so this is having a major beneficial impact. So I think it's more of a matter of education of maybe how much pornography results in a direct human abuse of women and girls. That's the best approach and not any kind of censorship.
So I want to take two more questions, the next two people in line, and we'll ask you to ask questions in succession briefly, and then we'll go back to President Carter.
And I'll try to give you brief answers, too.
President Carter, my name is Johnny Dorsey. I'm a graduate student. I want to thank you for shining a light on the rape crisis on college campuses, but I want to ask you also to say a bit about what you think needs to be done. I tried hard to work on this on my campus and found it to be one of the thorniest, most difficult issues I've ever dealt with. So what do you think universities and civil society organizations and the government can do to address this crisis?
Good, and let's take one more question and then we'll be done.
You want me to answer that?
No, sir, just hold off. We'll take this question and you answer both.
Thank you, President Carter. My name is Claudia Sheps. I'm a recent graduated student from the University of California, Irvine, and I was lucky enough to be part of an organization called the Olive Tree Initiative, which was inspired to be created based on your speech at UC Irvine in 2007. And I was lucky enough to travel to the Middle East and interact and learn about this Middle East conflict. And I just wanted to ask, what do you think for young people, what is their role and involvement? What can be the role and involvement of young people in this conflict to, you know, work towards the peace process? You spoke briefly about the diplomatic process. What about young people being able to have a role in this process, civil society organizations?
Good.
Okay. Well, the first question is this. Emory University, where I have been a professor for 32 years, the president there has adopted this issue of sexual abuse on the campus in a very aggressive way. And he's utilized a section of the Education Act that was passed, by the way, when I was president, that had Title IX in it. And that Title IX was originally designed to let women have an equal chance at sports. But now that act has been interpreted to provide protection for women from sexual abuse. And the federal government has now the authority to withhold federal grants to a university, even for basic research or whatever, if they don't take corrective action against rapists on the campus who now rape with impunity. So I think that any university that's willing to do so and face this question can be effective. On the Emory campus, though, since they've initiated this new policy of more encouragement of women to report rapes, now the Emory is having to suffer from being the university in America that has the most reported rapes on its campus, which is hurting the university. But if all universities would do that, it would be effective. So I think getting the federal government involved, but mainly taking the initiative from students and faculty, is the best approach. As far as young people are concerned in the Middle East, this is a very important question. When I wrote my book that was mentioned earlier, Palestine Peace, Not Apartheid, I might emphasize it not, I got the Nobel Peace Prize earlier, and I saved some of the money. And at Brandeis, which is heavily oriented toward friendship toward Israel, I helped to organize a group of students that go from Brandeis every year to Israel and to the West Bank. And it actually would take about 14 or 15, and I would pay part of the expenses, and they would go and spend some time in Israel and spend some time among Palestinians to learn both sides of the same controversial issue. And we've done this in other colleges around the country where I put in a maximum of $25,000 to help with the travel expenses and so forth. And I think that's had a beneficial effect. So I would say if you're interested in doing something about the Middle East peace process, get about 12 or 15 of your classmates, maybe get a couple of professors to go along if you like, and then go to the Holy Land and actually learn from the people involved what is the problem and how it might be overcome in the West Bank and Gaza and also within Israel itself.
Mr. President, we're going to wrap this up. One last question. This is obviously an incredibly complicated problem involving billions of women, and religion is obviously a major issue here. If you had to name one thing that you thought was the worst atrocity or the worst problem with concerning women in the world, what would it be and what can be done about it? In 25 words or less. What is your next move?
Well, I want the Carter Center to be the focal point for everybody that reads the book or listens to this program to say, what can we do to help you? Or we already have an organization that's trying to protect women. How can we be partners and make our double voices be more effective than our single voice? That was what I hope to do in the future. And Karen Ryan, who's in charge of this program, is on the front row. I would say that the most horrendous abuse is what I mentioned earlier. That is the murder of little girl babies or embryos because the parents want to have boys in their family if they have a limited family size, either ordained by the government or because they can't support a bigger family. And that can be done, I think, by making sure that that the people know that their daughters can be productive in the future, taking care of the family, and by educating women. And this should be a crime for parents to murder their children. But quite often, the government, say, of India and of China, have basically encouraged parents, or certainly not discouraged them, from strangling their babies when they're born. There's a movie that came out last November called It's a Girl. I saw it advertised on the side of buses in major cities. And there's one woman there from India who, without any shame, says that she strangled 8 daughters when they were born because she couldn't afford to feed them or put them through an educational process. And that, I think, is the most horrendous statistic that has been proven. So that's the way I would say. But I think if the world would just know that girls, if they are nurtured as well as boys, can be equally productive, equally supportive of their parents in the old age, maybe even more so, that would help to attenuate, certainly reduce this incidence of legalized or encouraged or condoned assassination of baby girls.
Mr. President, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Gentlemen, and now to answer the musical question, is the left right? It's a new show starring Hillary Clinton, Al Gore, Nancy Pelosi, and Ted Kennedy.
Democrats were having trouble falling all to pieces.
Tried to get protection as a new endangered species.
Then the press unveils Republican travails.
We'll win again if we reckon. Just stay out of jail.
And now it's
springtime for liberals and Hillary. Go hug a stem cell today.
Death row must go away. It's cruel.
Unless you try to pray in school.
Springtime for liberals is here to stay. Send France the whole NRA.
What do you think Al Gore would say if he were alive today?
Don't be scared to tell your mommy. Come on, be a pinko commie. Revolution, we're promoting evolution.
My name's Ed, you'll see us thrive. Come on, ladies, you want to ride?
Springtime for liberals and Hillary. This is our one year to score. Bring out the big time artillery. It's our chance to show it. You and I know it. We're going to blow it for sure.
10 million soldiers to the war have gone. May never return again. 10 million mothers' hearts must break for the one who died in vain. Heads bowed down in sorrow in her lonely years. I heard a mother murmur through her tears. I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
Who dared to place a musket on his shoulders? To shoot some other mother's darling boy.
The stations are the race, their future trouble.
It's time to lay the sword and gun away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
What victory can cheer a mother's heart when she looks at her blighted home? What victory can bring her back all she cared to call her own? Let each mother answer in the years to be, remember that my boy belongs to me.
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
And boy, who dared to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some other mother's darling boy? The stations are but great, their future troubles. It's time to lay the sword and gun away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
Who dares to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some other mother's darling boy? Let nations arbitrate their future troubles. It's time to lay the sword and gun away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
I'm going to preach you a sermon about old man Adam, and I don't mean Adam in the Bible, datum. I don't mean Adam that Mother Eve mated. I mean that thing that science liberated. Einstein says he's scared. And if Einstein's scared, boy, I'm scared. Well, if you're scared of the A-bomb, here's what to do. You got to join with all the people in the world with you. Cause if we don't get together and do it well, first thing you know, we'll blow this world to... Well, here's the moral as plain as day. Old man Adam is here to stay. He's gonna stick around, it's plain to see. But ah, my dearly beloved, are we? We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men may be cremated equal. You know, life used to be such a simple joy. The cyclotron was just a super toy. Folks got born, they'd work and marry, and Adam was a word in the dictionary. Then it happened. These science guys from every clime, they all pitched in with overtime. Before you knew it, the job was done. They'd hitched up the power of the doggone sun, put a harness on old Sol. Splitting atoms right and left, while the diplomats were splitting hairs. Of course, the cartel crowd up and put on a show. They're gonna turn back the clock on the UNO. Grab a corner on atoms and maybe extinguish every darn atom can't speak English. Down with foreign-born atoms. America for American atoms. Step right up, folks, and atomize world peace. But the atoms in the national, in spite of hysteria, flourishes in Utah, also Siberia. Whether you're white, black, red, or brown, the question is this, when you boil it down, to be or not to be, that is the question. Atoms to atoms and a dust to dust. If you listen to the money bag, something's bound to bust. Yes, it's up to the people, cause the atom don't care. You can't fence him in, he's just like air. He don't give a darn about any politics or who got what into whichever fix. All he wants to do is sit around and have his nucleus bombarded by neutrons. Now, the answer to it all ain't military datum, like who gets there fustest with the most is atoms, but the people of the world must decide their fate. We gotta stick together or disintegrate.
That's all, folks.